guest is on the line, everybody. This is we're going to have fun. We're going to have fun with this tonight. My guest is Bobby Achterstein, founder of Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation. Bobby.
Yes.
You're there.
Yes.
We had a little trouble getting through to you, but welcome to the show. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, you did.
Excellent. And you are the founder of Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation and a writer for Ghost Magazine. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I noticed that you you wrote a couple of books, but we'll get to that later in the interview.
Okay.
Now, when I found the site for the Paranormal Research and Investigation, it looks like it's a relatively new foundation, so to speak. It's a nonprofit, right?
Yeah, we are actually working on getting that status. The group itself has been around since 2000.
Right.
But yeah, we were originally the Virginia Ghost and Hauntings Research Society, and then changed our name because we were going to focus on expanding beyond just ghosts and hauntings, and it became the Center for Paranormal Research and Investigation. And we were incorporated last year, and we're working on the. It's just a lot of work to prove to the IRS that that paranormal research is worthy of a nonprofit status.
Gotcha. Okay, so you mentioned the old website, and that's. I was probably familiar with that, and when I saw yours, I was getting a little confused. But and you're also a writer for Ghost Magazine, that's correct?
Yes, it is.
I haven't heard of Ghost Magazine. Where can I get it?
You know, they were doing really well in the beginning. They supposedly have a deal with Ingram's Books, which means you can find them in Barnes & Noble's, Borders. The best way to get it is to go to their website, ghostmag.com, and you can order it. And right now they're putting out magazines quarterly.
Okay.
But I have to say they're really good quality. I mean, when you get an issue, it's got a lot of good stuff, really, really put together.
Nice. And what motivated you to found CPRI?
I was motivated because as a child, I was born and raised in Virginia, and I experienced a lot of unexplainable things.
Right.
And I've also been sort of a science geek, and so I didn't like the fact that when you saw people on television talking about this, they always approached it from a metaphysical slant using psychics and Ouija boards and blah, blah, blah. I thought that was a bunch of crap. So, you know, I wanted to know, you know, is this really something, you know, are people really insane, or is there really something going on? And if there is, science should be able to back it up.
Gotcha.
So we're a little different. A lot of these ghost groups out there want to prove that there's life after death, and I personally could care less if there's life after death. You know, if I find out at the end of my research that it's all just a bunch of neurons that are misfiring and people are hallucinating, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Or if I find that, yes, you know, there seems to be some sort of spirit or soul that lives on, I'm fine with that too.
Gotcha. Now, you spoke of early experiences. Do you have any in particular that you could share with us? Because I've got a litany of stuff that I'll get to eventually. But I was wondering, what kind of stuff how young were you when you experienced these things, and what were they specifically?
Well, the first thing wasn't something that I personally experienced, but my mother experienced. And I heard her telling my father this. And I was, wow, That's Incredible was on TV. So I was probably five,
okay.
If that old. Way back then. And what happened was my mother woke up one night and she saw a man who was slightly hunchback,
right,
in a plaid suit standing in the doorway, and she's trying to get my father to wake up, who could sleep through a tornado.
Uh-huh.
And by the time she gets him roused, the guy just disappeared in thin air.
Sweet.
She gets a phone call the next day that her Uncle Homer, who was notorious for his trademark plaid suits and a hunchback, had passed away.
Wow.
And that happened twice. It happened with her grandmother and the Homer guy. So hearing that as a young child in your mind, hearing an adult say that, it's like, wow, ghosts do exist, you know? And so my sister and I were always interested in it, doing our little, you know, EVP research after watching In Search Of and things like that. As far as my experiences, I probably had, well, you know, the house we lived in was a part of, it was built, my parents built it in the 70s, but it was on land that was part of a plantation, and my father and actually two different sets of grandparents actually lived in the main house, the original house that was built in the 1700s.
Okay.
And so we think whatever happened in my parents' house is probably tied to the land itself, because we don't know of any dwellings that were ever there before they built their house.
Right.
But for instance, I was home alone, you know, around fifth or sixth grade, and I was supposed to be cleaning the house to earn my allowance. And we lived out in the country, and our basement, the entrance to our basement was in the kitchen, and it was deadbolted. We kept it closed because, you know, you get, you know, all kinds of creepy crawlies that get in through the basement that we didn't want in our house.
Right.
And someone, it sounded as if someone took their fist and just slammed it as hard as they could against the door on the basement side.
Mm-hmm.
And I automatically screamed, you know, Mom, and I was the only one there. I called my mom, freaked out. She called the neighbor who came, checked out the house. No one had gotten in the basement, you know, the outside door to the basement. No one, you know, no explanation.
Right.
But everyone that ever spent any time in that house, my sister and I, we always had our friends, my parents' house was like the you know, the place to come hang out, always said your house was haunted. You would hear doorknobs turning. I've heard footsteps in the kitchen that were distinct. And my first thought was never, it's a ghost, it's, holy crap, there's a person that's looking in and let me get out of here.
Right.
You know. But I lived in a house in Lynchburg that was built in the 20s, and I would come in from work, and this is in broad daylight because I get home around 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I would see people in color, 3D, standing in my living room. And
nope.
I would, seriously, and then they just disappear, and I don't even know who the heck they were.
Now, when this happened, and I'll share my favorite ghost sightings, because I'll get to that. Like I said, I'm letting you, as like a good interviewer, I'm letting you tell your stories first. But when you see these things, is it as if they're in front of you, and you look away, and you think, wait a second, you look back, and then they're gone, or do you see them for an extended period of time, even if it's just 5-10 seconds?
Well, I've had both. The ones in Lynchburg, I would look, and I would kind of say to myself in my mind, please go away, I want to take a nap.
Right.
And I looked back up, and they would be gone. Now, my parents' house, a lot of times I would sit up in the living room and watch TV, be up really late at night, and I would look over from my parents' living room. They had like double doors, and you could see into the kitchen, and I would look up and see three, and I call them shadow figures.
Yeah, I love shadow people.
Yeah, and I would see it was three people, and from their stature and everything, I would say they were a man, two men, and a woman. And I looked up, and I thought, holy crap. And I looked away thinking that when I looked back up, they would be gone. And I, like, closed my eyes and opened, you know, and looked back up, and they were still there. And at that point, I'm like, I'm going to bed. You know? The best story I have about a shadow person is in the house in Lynchburg. And this is so random. I was upstairs in the main bathroom getting ready to wash my face. I have the hall light on. I have the bathroom light on. Everything's lit up. It's not dark or spooky. Everything's lit up.
Right.
And I'm getting ready to close my eyes and, you know, splash water on my face. And I happen to look in the doorway because I have the bathroom door open. And right there, and this is maybe 2 feet away from me, there is a shadow person. But I could see it. Not that there was any detail because it was opaque, but it looked like a 2D cutout. It was two-dimensional.
Right.
And what was strange, first of all, I'm like, holy crap. It actually...
You say that a lot.
Yeah. Actually, I say a lot of other things, but I'm trying to be radio-friendly.
Gotcha.
But it actually, like, I don't know if it was surprised that I was there or surprised that I could see it, but it actually snuck back.
Yeah.
Like, tiptoed back. And I was just, so I saw that. I mean, it lasted probably 10 seconds, which is a long time for these kind of sightings.
Right.
I was not about to close my eyes and wash my face. I hauled butt downstairs to tell my roommate what happened, you know. And we've actually, as far as the shadow people, they're a really interesting phenomenon. We've had a couple of cases outside of the Richmond area where multiple, and I mean 40-plus independent witnesses within the same two-mile area have all seen shadow people that fit descriptions of minors, like with pickaxes and things. And wow. There are a bunch of old mines and a bunch of noted and recorded mine tragedies that happened in that area.
All right. Well, let me stop you there then. First of all, I want to say that when I'm speaking to someone like you who has seen these things and is I call people like us believers. It's funny how our stories are so similar. Like, you're telling your story, and it's almost exactly like the stories that I have.
Wow.
But moving on from that for just a moment, because you're talking about large sightings, I want to talk more about the investigations that you've done. Like, how many investigations have you done? What areas of the state of Virginia have you done them in? And are there any that... like you mentioned, the miners that stick out in your mind as particularly impressive?
Hundreds and hundreds of investigations. We're probably approaching the 1,000 mark pretty soon.
Wow.
Over 8 years. I mean, basically, people always ask, is there a certain part of the state that's more haunted than another? And it comes in ebbs and flows. When we first started doing this, the Eastern Virginia, Virginia Beach, Norfolk area.
Right.
And Western Virginia, meaning Roanoke, out towards the mountains, were the two hot spots of the state.
Hmm.
And over the years, it shifted, and here in the past couple of years, the greater Richmond area, has had, probably as many cases, and the north, what we call the northwestern region, meaning Culpeper, Spotsylvania.
Oh, I got a Culpeper ghost story for you, but you ought to come out to Burke, Virginia. I live in Burke, right outside of Fairfax, right across basically from the Patriot, George Mason Patriot Center. And Burke is loaded with Civil War ghosts. I mean, I'm not kidding. I got Civil War ghosts that walk right down my alley, and I sometimes I see them, and sometimes I just feel them. But I'll tell you, I know they're there because last Thanksgiving, my brother flew in for Thanksgiving, and he was staying with my wife and I. And he went outside. I guess he was cooking a steak. It was the night before Thanksgiving or something. And he went outside, and I go outside, and he goes, you have ghosts in this alleyway. And I said, did you see them? And he goes, no, but I sense they're here. And I said, oh, you should see them sometimes. It's great. It's like a regiment of soldiers. And I've been walking the dogs, literally saw a soldier bolt through a fence halfway across the street, and then he disappeared. And I want to ask somebody like you, when he disappeared, and this was evening, but there were streetlights. It was well lit, right?
Uh-huh.
But when he disappeared, I wondered, because he looked like a Civil War, you know, like he had the garb, the dress, the uniform. Mm-hmm. And when he disappeared, do you think he went into a vortex of some sort, or may that mark where he may have died or something?
That's a good question.
Or maybe he just had enough energy to expend and then, you know, ran out of that paranormal energy, whatever it is.
That's always been my personal prevailing theory, is that, you know, because if you try to figure out why do they only come out sometimes, why do only certain people seem to experience this stuff more than other people? And I think that the environmentals play a big part, yeah. I mean, I don't think they have that much energy to manifest that to that degree where it's so easily seen all the time. If that were the case, I think this planet would be a lot more crowded to us.
Yeah. Now, I'll back up, and I wanted to talk about some of the more haunted places you've been in where people have called you and said, hey, come out and take a look at this, and you've actually experienced anything. Do you have any good stories like that?
Yeah, I mean, actually, probably one of the better ghost stories we have is from Culpeper from Salubria.
Okay.
And, of course, that's where the first first governor of Virginia, Governor Spotswood's wife, once he passed away, she remarried a minister, and he built this big, beautiful house in Salubria, named Salubria in the middle of Culpeper County. And the theory is there's no light, no electricity, no running water. It's as is, built in the 1700s. It's a brick structure. And the theory is that you can hear Mrs. Spotswood walking around upstairs looking for her son, was killed during, it was the Revolutionary War, or went missing, in that she's looking, you know, watching out the windows, looking for him to come home.
Right.
And we got permission to investigate, and we actually have a cryptozoologist who's his main interest is in Bigfoot. And he actually has a Yeti mobile, which was a mobile veterinarian clinic that he turned into. He had it FLIR and all sorts of TV screens and things so you can watch, you know, the infrared and thermal imaging. And my researcher was in the house with the radio by himself, which is against our rules. And he says, I'm hearing a baby cry. So I go in there with a flashlight, and I'm just so certain that he's just imagining things. And I get in there, I don't hear a baby crying. So we're looking around. So it's just a beautiful place. And we hear a woman moaning from upstairs. And it's not, well, it's just sort of a...
Ooh.
Yeah. Well,
love it.
It was very similar to that. And, I mean, it was very loud. We were downstairs, and we were talking a normal conversational, you know, volume.
Right.
And we hear that, and I'm thinking, oh, my, you know. And we run upstairs. We were actually standing in between the two entrances to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran upstairs, nothing. So we call some more people in there. We put a tape recorder upstairs. And there's probably six or seven people downstairs were being very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear someone walking. And all of us start looking at each other like, did you hear that? Did you hear that? Sure enough, someone walking around up there. And when we retrieved the tape recorder, it had been turned off. And it was one of those manual, old-fashioned, you know.
Right, yeah. Just
the button.
Yeah.
And what happened was when we rewound the tape, before it was turned off, it sounded as if someone went into the microphone and just went... You know, just blew hard into the microphone, and then it was turned off, and there was no one up there.
Ooh, I love it. I'm getting the goose pimples.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you mentioned Culpeper, and I have a buddy who lives out there, and he used to work at the Lord Culpeper Inn. You might want to check this place out. The hotel, it's like a bed and breakfast, I guess. And the old owner there apparently haunts that place, so people see him all the time, and it's a fairly well-known ghost story. But in the basement, there's a bar. There's a just a regular, you know, I would call it just a regular saloon-type bar in the basement. And he was working late one night, and he came around the corner to, you know, wipe down the bar and everything about 3 in the morning and saw a woman kind of floating across the room in a white dress and floated for about 10 seconds, 15 seconds, and he said, well, that's it, I'll wipe down the bar tomorrow, and he left. Turned out that there was a woman who was killed by her jealous husband in the 70s right in that basement, pretty much in the area where it used to be the back of the bar, but they actually extended it. So she was literally where she would have been stepped outside of the bar in like what used to be a stairwell.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a fascinating one. I was at his house, which was right across this parking lot, and I was getting a cup of tea in the morning, and I was with it. It was about 11 in the morning, and I saw like half of a figure, like some work pants and boots, walking across this parking lot. But I thought it was a person. I wasn't really looking out the window. I was kind of looking down at the cup of tea, and when I looked up, I saw it walking, but there was no upper half of the body. So I mean, that place is just nuts for that.
Mm-hmm.
For that.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah.
Now, as far as EVP, my first guest when I started the show a few months ago was a woman named Catherine Ramsland. She's an author of all kinds of great books, and she had some EVPs that were pretty fascinating. My wife is a good friend of hers. They went ghost hunting in Gettysburg once, and they got orbs on videotape coming out of a fireplace. So what I'm getting at is, what do you make of EVPs, and also what do you make of orbs? What's your take on the orbs?
Okay, take on the orbs is simple. They're mostly dust. I have yet to see an orb that I believe is authentic. I mean, I just think I don't think orbs are good, or they're not a good form of evidence.
Right.
We get tons of people sending us pictures, and there's just too many factors that could cause it that you can't consider it evidence.
Although I saw the night vision movie that they shot, and they got the things that made it not like dust was kind of the way they moved. Literally, we slowed down the tape. You could see them pop out, what looked like popping out of the brick fireplace. And So, like I said, I think it's inconclusive. I'm not sure what they are, but it was fascinating to look at because they would start, they would stop, they would change position in the frame of the camera. You know what I mean?
Well, okay, was this shot with infrared?
Yeah. Well, yeah, the green screen.
The green, yeah. Another thing you have to watch for, and I know you're going to think I'm insane when I tell you this, but are bugs. Because we got really excited one night. We had infrared, not infrared, but yeah, infrared set up, and we see this, and we're like, oh my goodness, it's, you know, almost glowing, and it's maneuvering intelligently.
Right.
And we actually had a guy who's whatever this, you know, scientific name for the bug experts, look at it and determine the flight pattern. Because of the way the video cameras, the frames are shot, it didn't look like a moth. I'm like, I know what a moth looks like. That's not a moth. But actually, when we gave him the videotape and you look at it, the way that the frames are shot with the particular video camera we had at any rate,
mm-hmm.
It was a moth. So that's why infrared, you know, everyone's like, oh, let's film in the dark and because it's spookier. But, you know, it's just, it's really hard unless you have, you know, granny step out of the, you know,
sure.
You know, it's just really hard. I actually think EVPs are better, a better form of.
EVPs are fascinating. And there's no way when, especially, well, you said you were using an old cassette deck style for recording, and the digital ones are even, I think more sensitive. But there's no way, really, of saying, well, that's a bug or a piece of dust.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we've actually had success. We, our members, you know, have their own equipment, so we have the range of the, you know, the old analog and the digital. And the best EVP, and I'll have to put it up on the website. I just recently moved our website. You know, EVPs can be, you know, people will hear a lot of things. To me, an EVP that's impressive is one where no one has to question what was said.
Right.
You don't have to turn your computer speaker up to, you know, something that's going to blast your eardrums. We actually have, we hold a boot camp a couple of times a year, at least once a year, and that's to train newbies who maybe haven't had a lot of investigation experience how to do an investigation. We try to choose a place that does have activity. So this last boot camp we did, which was last August, was at Sailor's Creek Battlefield Park in Amelia County, and they actually have a house called the Hillsman House, which did serve as a hospital during the Civil War. It's built in the 1700s, it's still standing. And the Hillsman family, you know, owned the property, so there's a family cemetery. The battlefield where it was over 10,000 soldiers were killed. It was right before Lee made his surrender in Appomattox.
Right.
Happened there. So they had two teams running. They had one team learning to do stuff outside on a battlefield and one team inside doing the house. And part of the house was EVP research. And there were lots of children that were buried in the graveyard, the family cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my investigators asked, are those your children in the graveyard? And there's a pause, and there's an absolutely distinct male voice that says, yes.
Wow.
And that's on our website. I've got to make sure the audio is up there. But people hear, I mean, it just blew me away.
Yeah.
Because there was no amplification. There was, I mean, it's just like they said no one heard it. It was like eight people in the room. No one heard that. And it was captured on more than one person's recorder, which makes it even more interesting.
Wow. That's something I've never really heard before as far as multiple takes on, mm-hmm. on different instruments. You were discussing areas of the state earlier, and I had a question about that. As far as activity and reported sightings, do you see, in your experience, and obviously sharing experiences with people that might have been into this even longer than yourself, do you see areas of a particular state or large area fluctuate with these kind of things? Is it almost like an energy, almost like weather?
Absolutely, yeah, okay. It is like that. And in certain times of year, I mean, this time of year.
Any idea why that is?
I actually think that it's geological. I mean, the western part of the state is always a hot spot.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the mountains, and you have a lot of different types of mineral deposits there. And then, of course, you have the water, the ocean,
yeah.
The eastern part of the state. And anywhere that you look of places that have a long-standing history of being haunted, you're going to find usually running water, be it underground or near you know, a lake or something like that. And the mountains, I mean, the problem is with the mountains, for instance, you have a certain type of culture in the mountain area, and they have certain beliefs, and a lot of people will not discuss ghosts. It's something that's just normal to them. It's like, yeah, I got a ghost, you know.
Right.
And so they don't necessarily report it to us. What's been interesting, a shift that's happened just in the past, I would say in the past three to four years, there's been a big shift, and there's been a lot of reported cases in the what we call the greater Richmond area, which includes like Chesterfield County, you know, Goochland, Henrico, and Richmond City.
Right.
And, of course, there's a lot of Civil War stuff.
Sure.
You know, with the Richmond area. So it's just, it does. And in the times of year, we actually have a dead time for us. I mean, we're getting towards the dead time now. This time frame, when the weather starts getting warmer, it starts being light outside longer, we don't get as many cases. We get cases, but not as many. And right along August, September time frame, when, you know, the season starts to change again,
uh-huh.
It seems that it picks up. And we will literally still be investigating cases that we got in the fall. We'll still be working those. Now we're still working some of them. So we really, our crunch time, of course, Halloween, and that's maybe not just because of things that are ghostly that are happening, but because we, you know, being that Halloween, all the local reporters and newspapers want to talk to the Ghostbusters.
Right.
And so we get a lot of media exposure. So a lot of people that didn't know we existed find out about us. So that helps. But yeah, we bust our butts from September to, you know, the March time frame, really.
Do you have a particular favorite, well, I don't know, or I wrote this question, I'll just read it to you how I wrote it. What is one of the most haunted places that you've been in, one where you just, you sensed a lot of activity, you may have recorded and or picked up a lot of activity?
I would have to say that as far as places that I've personally investigated, I would say the place that has the most activity is a private residence in Chesapeake, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
It's the first case we investigated. It's a Mennonite family, and they got married in the 70s. There was an old house that was pre-Civil War, old farmhouse, that was in bad shape. So they tore it down, and the idea was to have the remains of the house hauled away, and they were going to build their cute little, you know, 70s-style brick rancher on top of it, you
right.
know, where it was. Well, they didn't have enough money to move the house away. So what they did, the hole that was dug for their basement,
yeah.
they literally pushed the old house in the basement and buried their house on top. And
uh-oh, that doesn't sound like a good idea.
And they don't have a basement. Yeah, that house, I mean, levitate ornaments floating off the Christmas tree.
Did you see that kind of stuff?
I didn't see that, but I've been in that house 3 or 4 times. I actually went out there with Jason and Grant of Taps, and we filmed an
right.
episode of Ghost Hunters there. And the coolest thing that I actually missed, my investigators were out there a few years ago, and they had an infrared camera trained on one of my investigators and a PBS person, because PBS was out there filming a, you know, Ghost of Virginia series.
Okay.
And they were upstairs. The rest of my crew and the family were downstairs watching this on a monitor, and it was being recorded on a VCR. This was back, you know, 8 years ago, before DVDs took
right.
the change. And they see a mist that's behind the two women. The two women are chatting. They're not aware that anything's happening.
Right.
And out of the mist, they start to see legs that are walking. Basically, they are watching an apparition begin to materialize, and it's walking towards the women from behind them.
Sweet.
Well, the PBS girl, the other reporter who was downstairs, freaks out and starts screaming bloody murder. She runs to the door. They were up in the attic. She runs to the door and says, get out now. And of course, the two women are like, what the heck's going on? They're sitting in this dark room. So they come downstairs and they try to rewind the tape to show them what happened. And PBS, the camera person, was filming everyone watching the screen.
Right.
They weren't filming the screen. The tape was not recording. It was as if he had never turned it on.
Wow.
Blank. And everything electrical started going crazy. The phone started ringing. And what's interesting, I had left them a voicemail telling them that I couldn't make it out there. And my message kept replaying to them as if it was a new message. Just everything went crazy.
All right, you're freaking me out.
Yeah. That house, I mean, they have, you know, they've seen a Civil War soldier, the kids, there were three, I guess just two boys, used to string string across the room and put bells on it, so when they entered their room, they would know.
Now, do they still live there, or they get the heck out?
No, the husband and wife live there. The two boys are grown and don't live there anymore. But no, they still live there, and they basically, and you know, we've been out there a number of times, and they basically want evidence because they've been ostracized by their community, really, because they're Mennonites, and Mennonites don't believe in that.
Yeah, they're tight like the Amish.
Exactly. So they want people to know they're not crazy, they're not making this up, and it's just, it's very elusive. I mean, a lot of people have experienced all kinds of crazy things, but what's interesting in the house, if you look at it, it's a typical little rancher. It's very cozy inside because she's made all her curtains. I mean, it's very cutesy, but that house, I mean, it's one of those houses that looks nice.
Yeah.
But when you're in there, you're kind of like looking over your shoulder because you're just waiting for something to happen.
You get the vibe?
Yeah. There's so much stuff that's happened in that house. And she has two dolls that are haunted.
Right.
And she's been featured on, like, Montel Williams and the doll. I actually had tape of one of the dolls whose eyes were painted on. It was an ugly little doll she got from a Williamsburg antique store.
Uh-huh.
And the pupils were dilating and constricting. I took it into Adobe Director and did it frame by frame to measure the pupils, pupil size. Yes, not great. I mean, it wasn't a huge difference, but there was a marked difference.
That's great. Now, let me share a couple of my stories with you, if you'll indulge me for a moment. I work in this radio station. I've worked here for 11 years. My first 3 years, I was a part-timer. I ran records overnight on the weekends. And I'm in Fairfax City, which is just outside of D.C. But I grew up in Fairfax City, and I can share a lot of stories about ghosts in Fairfax. But working in this station late one night, things would happen, like we have a hallway, and out in the hallway are a bunch of tapes on the walls that are commercial carts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I would go to get a cup of water in the kitchen or something, and there'd be a couple of carts laying in the hallway. And I'd think, well, you know, the shift before me was like a Redskins game, so they probably were so busy they dropped a couple of carts, didn't bother to pick them up. So I'd pick them up, put them back in their place. And then I'd go get my water, come back to the studio, and then maybe an hour or two later, yeah, I have to go to the bathroom. So I go back on the hallway, and there's a couple of more carts on the floor, and I'm the only person in the station. And I know that because the way the station is configured, you have to go by the studio window to come in, basically, especially back then. Then one night, in the back wall of the studio, I was reading a book, running my jazz records, and I saw a small regiment of Civil War soldiers outside the window, kind of ambling along like they were talking. And I thought they were just drunks or something. It was very late at night, and I thought they were just people out on the sidewalk, you know, staggering home from the bars, which are just down the street. And I looked, and I saw them I watched them walk past my view of the window. But I realized that they were dressed in Civil War stuff. And then so I ran out of the studio to look at a bigger window, and they were gone.
Wow.
Then another night, I've got stories about this place. Another night, I got a sense that somebody was watching me, and I spun around in my chair in the back wall of the studio. This was my favorite one. This was definitely a shadow person, but again, had the figure, the forming of a Union soldier with a little bucket cap on top.
Uh-huh.
And he was morphing through the wall. But when I turned around, he saw that I noticed this. And he morphed right back into the wall.
Wow.
And I mean, I'm working, I'm doing night shifts, and so I'm stone cold sober. I sleep all day, so I'm aware. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. Now, when I told these stories on one of the radio shows on the station, they said, well, you know, that's crazy. You know, they're not really believers, and that's fine. But then this girl that was working in the sales department was working in her small office, and somebody walked by her office, and she was working late, so she didn't realize that there were still people working, you know, down the hall.
Mm-hmm.
So she went to see what they were doing there so late, like her, you know, just chat them up. And she got down to the end of the hall where there's some cubicles, and there was nobody there. And so she decided to bag it and get out of the building. But she told the story, and I said, you see, I'm not nuts. This place is active.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's you should really check out this hotel. It's a bed and breakfast in Fairfax. You may have heard of this one. It's called the Bailiwick Inn.
We've been there, yeah.
Have you? The bridal suite?
Yeah.
Did you get anything out of there? Now, I've never been in that place, but it's a that place has been haunted since, and I've been told about it since I was a kid.
Yeah, they actually had a big mirror that was on the wall that, like, literally jumped off the wall.
And were you there, or is that their story?
No, my investigators were there. I have about 20 different investigators.
Oh, okay.
The people in the Northern Virginia region went up there to do it. And this was a few years back, and the inn contacted us to investigate them. And yes, they had one of the guys. It was his very first investigation. He was very skeptical. And they're in that room, the bridal suite, and the mirror, which was of a considerable size, literally jumps off the wall.
Yeah, I've heard that ghost is a bit of an angry ghost and trips people up and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very active place. I've had another friend that has that does investigating in that area, and they went out there and had experiences. Yeah, very neat place.
All right, I have two other real quick stories. I have a part-time business, pressure washing, you know, cleaning, and most of my clients are like gas stations. And I work at night, and I was doing a gas station in Burke. Actually, these are two different gas stations, two different stories. But the first story is this Exxon. It's at Zion Drive and 123. And after the person in the little glass booth, you know, shuts everything down and goes home at about 11 o'clock, it gets so spooky up there. Like, I couldn't even work. I felt like people were just right over my shoulder, and I couldn't shake it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the funny thing about it. While I'm having these feelings, when this guy leaves, you know, they have the overhead music. It's like 50s music, plays all day. He shuts off the music and he shuts off the lights in the glass booth. So while I'm getting these weird vibes and I'm trying to just kind of shake them off because I'm like, you know, sure, I'm in haunted Burke and I'm fine with that. But it was just real uneasy. The music came on and the lights in the booth turned on. and then I said, well, I said, okay, guys, I'm going to get out of here in just a few minutes, okay? I'm going to wrap up and get out of here. And then the music cut off and the light went off in the booth. And I said, yeah, I'm going to get out of here now. Then the other gas station was a Shell station on the other side of Burke. And they have one of those car washes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I was going through the car wash, cleaning it, pressure washing it. I had the actual machine on one side of the wash garage, and I had my line to my gun, and I'm going through there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm almost at the end, and I know I've got plenty of line, but I feel it snag up, like I've got to reach back and pull it. And I didn't think about this, but I turned around, and when I did, there was a woman in like 1800, a blue dress, like 1800 style, almost kind of a hoop skirt,
mm-hmm.
standing there, and my line wasn't snagged on anything. So I pulled some line and I just said, trying to work here, and she just faded away. And that one didn't give me the creeps, though. I don't know what that was all about. So those are two of my favorites here.
Wow.
Also saw my grandmother this year. She died in December, and after we buried her, I was at home cooking, I guess doing dishes or something in my kitchen, and I turned around and she was looking at me, but she was smiling. It was as if she was saying, well, I'm okay, and I'm moving on.
Oh.
That didn't bother me at all either. We also had a little shadow entity, my wife and I, when we first moved into our place. We rent. But we had this little entity that we would see from time to time, about maybe the size of a small dog or a small child, kind of just that size, you know, like hip high or knee high.
Right.
And we would see that thing kind of, you know, just out of a corner of our eye, or it would pass a doorway. And we just called it our little ghost. Because it didn't do anything, and it didn't really scare us, but we both saw it all the time. and then it went away, though, and we can't figure out, what's your take on that when things are, you know, they're obviously active, and then they just kind of fade away? Do they go somewhere else?
You know, I honestly, this is my personal theory, is that what's happening, they are wherever they are all the time, and it just happens like maybe somehow our dimensions cross, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe certain environmental measures, you know, such as the level of electromagnetic energy in the air and of course the barometric pressure and things like that will allow maybe the play a part in the dimensions crossing, you know, and like maybe it's just our two, you know, lines of existence just cross
right
every once in a while.
I know what you're getting at, because this stuff is kind of unexplainable. We won't know it until we pass on ourselves. And that's part, it's almost comforting though, because I don't believe that when you die, you just rot into the ground and the game is over. I think these things, these experiences that I've had kind of give me an awareness that there's definitely somewhere else to go, whether it's heaven or hell, or if you just wander around the earth and you get to fly and walk, okay, and walk through walls. But listen, I got to wrap this up. It's been fascinating. I want to give you a moment. I know you've written some books and stuff, so I'm going to give you some time to just plug away. What you got going on that people can, that people can buy?
Well, I do have a book called Haunted People, Haunted Minds, and that focuses on my, at the time, 6 years of research with the group in and around Virginia, and deals with my theories on such things as neurotheology and highlights some of my favorite cases, which I have spoken about tonight. You can go to our website, which is virginiaghost.com.
Right.
Virginia spelled out V-I-R-G-I-N-I-A. Ghost is plural, G-H-O-S-T-S.com. The link to the book, which you can find on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the usual places, you know, with my name, probably better off just to search for the title since my last name is strange. But Haunted People, Haunted Minds, a lot of the EVPs and a lot of more case detail is actually posted on the website. So,
right.
Yeah, we're kind of renovating the website right now, but we're always somewhere in the state is being investigated, usually every weekend.
Cool.
You know, so.
Well, I urge people to go because that stuff just fascinates me. Oh, and one more. What's your favorite, like, ghost movie from Hollywood? Just a movie. What's your favorite one? Because I've got my favorites, and I love not necessarily horror films, but what's your favorite movie? As far as that?
My favorite probably big name movie would be The Others.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've got to get that.
Yeah, that's good. But the most realistic ghost movie is a little known independent documentary called Urban Ghost Story.
Oh, okay.
And it was it was based on the Enfield Voice case, which happened in the 70s in the UK outside of London.
Yeah.
And the Urban Ghost Story, you can find, you search the internet, it's on DVD, but it was it is the most realistic. But as far as a mainstream movie, The Others, because it's so fascinating to think maybe we're just all ghosts to other people and we don't know it. So
awesome. Well, I actually enjoyed The Blair Witch. That was a fun one.
Yeah, I like that too.
And The Circle, is that the name of that movie? Where the guys watch a videotape and then they...
The Ring.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it was Ring. It's The Circle in Japanese. The Ring, the first Ring, was staggeringly terrifying to me.
Yeah, that was good, yeah.
And the thing about The Blair Witch, you either loved it or you hated it, but I remember this was when that came out, actually watching it on VHS, and I wasn't married yet, I still had roommates, and me and my buddy sat down with a couple of beers and said, all right, everybody either loves this movie or hates it. It was one of the few movies where we sat there and watched that movie, and we didn't talk, we didn't even move. I mean, our jaws were dropping. And the reason I like that movie, and I think the best ones are, is it's little more than a campfire story.
Exactly.
And campfire stories are definitely, the good ones are ones you can never shake.
Exactly.
Well, Bobby, I want to thank you for coming on. You were a great guest. Please keep in touch. If you want, join my MySpace page. Keep in touch and let me know whatever you guys are doing. If you need any publicity, feel free to get in touch.
Oh, definitely. We'll definitely have to check in with you to check out Burke, Virginia. Sounds like a happening place.
Yeah, you know what? I'll shoot you an email of some good, really good, solid stuff, you know.
That would be awesome. Well, that would be awesome.
Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again sometime.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Well, there you go. I knew that would be a great guest. I knew that that interview just does it by itself. You know what I mean? When you're talking ghost stories, you could just go on. I could go on till 11 o'clock. But I've got more to talk about with you, my listeners. 800-636-1067. Call in, won't you? You got any disgusting restaurant stories? I saw a guy flossing his teeth this week. I'll rehash that. But we'll be right back after these commercials on Joe Radio.
Show Radio.